I think it's rock bottom for baseball again. At least I hope that it is, because if things get worse than this, then there might be some more existential questions to ask. Plus, we've got hoops in full offseason swing, unless you're UConn and Purdue, and it's spring football season. We've got some updates for you there. All of that and more on this episode of Frogs Insider, which starts right now. Welcome in to another episode of Frogs Insider, episode number 60, Melissa.
Oh, wow. Milestone time.
Cruising yeah. Through these episodes. Number 60 here at Frogs Insider, part of the Dave Campbell's Texas Football Republic of Football Network. You can find our show wherever you just found our show, if you're listening to it, which means you're either on your favorite podcast streaming service or you're on the YouTube channel. Appreciate you either way. Go ahead and leave us a rating and a review. Leave a comment under the video if you'd be so kind. We appreciate all of the support. Brought to you by our lovely sponsors, Homefield Apparel and Hell's Half Acre Stadium Goods. Thankful for both of them as well. We're going to talk more about them later on in the show. But Melissa, I want to, off the top, talk about college hoops a little bit, because we've been pretty actively discussing hoops in the group chat the last couple of weeks,
yes.
Not only because of March Madness happening, but because of the absolutely banana sandwich coaching cycle that we are living through right now, that all started because USC's head coach decided to go to SMU. Mm-hmm.
And also, from banana there, sandwich?
I got lost in my phraseology.
I like it. I'm here for it. I think it fits.
I just pulled up at the last minute. That one's on me. I promise to do better next time. I pulled a Caitlin Clark from the logo, but unlike Caitlin Clark, I fully bricked and missed the shot.
It's good. I'm here for it.
So anyways, John Calipari leaving Kentucky to go to Arkansas. Musk going from Arkansas to USC. We've got, it's been crazy.
Yeah.
We've seen two coaches, Chris Beard and Jerome Tang, publicly use the Arkansas job to get extensions. Mm-hmm. Let's start here, actually, Melissa, now that I've mentioned Jerome Tang and I've reminded myself of this. Part of his extension agreement to stay at Kansas State means that there is now a clause, not just for basketball, but for all sports, that prohibits the university president from, quote unquote, interfering in student athlete code of conduct issues.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what happened at Kansas State earlier this year?
I do remember what happened at Kansas State earlier this year, and I remember what an ordeal it was. That is going to have quite the trickle-down effect in college athletics.
I think it's going to have quite the trickle-down effect at Kansas State.
Also that.
Oh, hey, you're just saying that the coaches and the AD now have all of the power and the say to enforce code of conduct for student athletes? Where have we seen things like that go wrong before?
Is this like Roger Goodell being the judge, jury, and executioner for the NFL for a couple of years before that changed? Yeah, this feels like it's moving us once again towards athletics operating as separate entities from actual universities, and sooner rather than later. I think it's probably ultimately a bad idea. Not to say that the athletics department at Kansas State don't have, you know, upstanding morals and values and integrity and all those things. But at the end of the day, your athletics department exists because of your university, and your university has likely been influenced by your athletics department. We've certainly seen that at TCU, but that's giving a little bit too much power to a department that has a vested interest in looking the other way occasionally in such circumstances.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how it bears out in practice versus in theory, but it's pretty clear even in theory to see some significant ways that it could backfire and go pretty poorly. Like you said, you hope that people operate with integrity. You hope that people operate from a place of good standing and just good ethics. Mm-hmm. In practice, that doesn't always happen. Not saying it will happen at Kansas State. I'm just saying it doesn't always happen. Interesting though, that is something that apparently rubbed Tang so but like the wrong way so badly that that was something he tried to get into writing at Kansas State.
Which also, as much as I want to think highly of Jerome Tang, I don't like that that was such a priority to him because of one instance. That's kind of, you know, putting the cart before the horse a little bit, I think, because he didn't like the way one thing went. And now he's going to potentially open up a can of worms that could greatly impact the university as a whole in a negative. There's really nothing like extra positive they gain from this. The only thing that we will ever know about will be if something bad happens.
True. That's true. And that's it's almost like an offensive lineman. You never talk about an offensive lineman when they're doing great. You only talk about offensive linemen when they've missed a key block. I will say, if you talk to Kansas State folks about it, they're all okay with it because there apparently has been a history of meddling by the university president that has gone above and beyond what's been reasonable and necessary. Mm-hmm. I can understand a fan's frustration, I think, if there was some nosy leadership. Not like in a, oh my gosh, I'm going to find these bad people and get them out of the program kind of way, but just a, hey, I'm going to make the process a lot harder for other people to do their jobs kind of way. Like that, I can see being a frustrating situation.
Daniel Pullen and Vibo would never.
TCU's got great leadership. That's all I'm going to say about that. TCU's got fantastic leadership. Top to bottom.
Agreed. It is very fascinating, kind of going back to the coaching carousel, that all of these pieces that move, that if you are a casual observer of college basketball, you're thinking, man, these are some big names from big blue blood programs kind of swapping around here. And it all hinged, and Roger Sherman had a great tweet about how, you know, this all hinged because USC's coach left for SMU and it the dominoes that fell from there. But I think you also, if you pay attention to the sport and you're a more in-depth fan, you realize these are all guys who had basically worn out their welcome at their current place and are getting out while the getting out was good. And Coach Cal especially, I mean, for Kentucky would have probably gotten rid of him, and certainly the fan base was over it. Because I think he's got, hasn't made a Final Four in 10 basketball seasons, has one win, no more than one win in the SEC tournament or the NCAA tournament in any of the last four seasons, haven't won an SEC championship in several years, and, you know, still sending guys to the NBA. His players are still incredibly successful in the NBA. I cheer for a team that has three of them that are three of the better players in the league. Hadn't won, and Cal's never really cared about winning except when they did win. Mm-hmm. But he's cared about getting guys to the league. And I think with a genuine, like, actually, like, I want you to have generational wealth kind of a meaning, at probably his own coaching record success. But, you know, it's not, there is a coup absolutely for Arkansas and the Tyson Chicken Empire to have gotten him, but I don't think there's a whole lot of tears being shed in Lexington today either. You know, Andy Enfield was going to be gone if he didn't choose to leave, and Arkansas fans were frustrated with him and their lack of success, you know, very recently. I mean, they've been a pretty good program. He's won a lot of games there.
They made the Final Four like 2 years ago. They were doing all right,
but when your football team is struggles, mm-hmm. and it's okay to maybe put a little bit more emphasis in basketball season, I guess.
Razorbacks, just hang your hat on that number one baseball team that you got.
Yeah.
Just hang your hat on Hagan
preseason.
Smith.
The only preseason highly touted team that seems to have lived up to the billing, or one of the few, because we certainly haven't experienced that. But we'll get to that a little bit later. It's fascinating. I want to know who's going to call Don Staley first. I was kind of pondering this, and I know there's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of people that disagree with me, but I don't know if there is a coach that any college basketball fan would want now if you had no coach. Like, who has done more in the last 3 years than Don Staley? Who has been better? Who has, like, not only recruited at a high level, but gotten her kids to play together? She recruits almost like Calipari, but her teams win. And they win with unselfish play. And they still go to the league and have success there as well. I will say again, you know, someone who loves the big game basketball, that's been coaching girls basketball for almost 30 years, watching this, I know I'm so old, I don't know how it happened. I was walking the dogs earlier today, and I walked by this girl, and her dad's like trying to coach her up, and you can see she's like rolling her eyes and she's so frustrated. And I was like, keep that guide hand up longer. Hold your follow through. You got this. Don't worry. And she looked at me. She was like, it was so funny. It was really cute. Her dad was like, yeah, listen to her. But yeah, I mean, to see the interest, the authentic interest around the sport for the last couple of weeks, really this whole last season, to see that game last night, which was unbelievable. Rack up almost 19 million views, most watched game, men's or women's, and I think in the last 5 years. It's been really cool to see that sport grow. And Dawn Staley, what an incredible ambassador, not just for women's college basketball, but college basketball in general. Just the way she handled the Caitlin Clark situation, how gracious she was, how much credit she was willing to give her, the way she handles her players, the genuine show of emotion. Just as someone who loves the game and loves the sport of basketball in general, super, super excited about this tournament run and really excited for the future, because as much as we all miss Caitlin Clark, there are a lot of Juju Watkins and Paige Beckers. I mean, there's still some big name talent coming up. So it's going to be fun to watch that sport continue to grow. And hopefully we're going to see some of that growth on the campus that you and I both know and love as well.
Yeah, that would be really great to see. Dawn Staley replaced all five starters, by the way, this year.
Which is insane. And didn't lose a game.
Went 38-0. Not a bad way to go about turning over your roster. You're right, though, Melissa, because for everybody outside of, I guess, South Carolina and Iowa as of yesterday, and UConn and Purdue on the men's side today, every other basketball team is having that conversation as a staff right now.
Yeah.
How are we going to improve next year? How are we going to make a deeper run in the tournament next year, or get to the conference tournament, or just qualify for something next year? Every coaching staff across the country is having that conversation, including TCU on the men and women's side with Jamie Dixon's staff and Mark Campbell's staff. We've seen a few portal entries on both of those rosters. Micah Peavy is in the transfer portal. Jacoby Coles is in the transfer portal for the men's team. And Melissa, when you look at the roster right now for men's basketball at TCU, you've got Ernest Uday. You've got potentially Assam Mustafa. You've got Jace Posey, and you've got Isaiah Manning.
Isaiah Manning, yeah.
And then you've got the four incoming freshmen. Those are your eight right now. And you've got the CJ Walker graduate transfer from Central Florida. So those are your nine right now, which means you've got four, potentially five if Mustafa doesn't return, scholarships to get some veteran leadership. Find yourself a point guard, find yourself a shooter, find yourself a backup center, find yourself a wing, because you need more than one or two if you include Manning in that. Things are at an interesting crossroads, I feel, from a roster management standpoint for men's basketball. And we knew that this was coming, but now that it's here, especially when you lose PV and Coles in the portal, the situation starts to look pretty dire, more dire than even I was anticipating it being right now, even though we're still pretty early in the offseason.
Well, I mean, it's like, where are you? Oh, gosh, Bauer's going to absolutely lose his mind. It's just, hey, dude, we're recording, sir, please. So let's see how effective that is. Of course, it's right as you finish, too, so I can't even mute it, right? So, yeah, I mean, I think that my question is, A, who's the known quantity? Because we all love the potential of Ernest Uday, but we haven't seen anything that makes us feel like he can be a go-to guy next year. And that's your most experienced player. That's your only guy, potentially, that played any kind of significant minutes this past season. Who is going to score the basketball? Who's going to dribble the basketball up the court? You know, who is going to be your captain and your leader? I mean, you are talking about completely rebuilding on the fly again, and you've had mixed results doing so. But what you don't have going into next year that you did have this year is a core of guys who had been around the program for 2 or 3 years, who knew the system, who had experience playing in big games. You don't have any of that. You don't have Emmanuel Miller. You don't have Micah Peavy. You know, you don't have these guys that know what it's like to compete in this program and know how to do what Jamie Dixon wants to do, even if they didn't always do so this year. There was at least a foundation. Your foundation is basically Jace Posey, Isaiah Manning, and Ernest Uday, and one of those guys has played basketball at the collegiate level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's terrifying.
It's and There are definitely moments where younger players step up and play incredibly well. Sure. There's an opportunity for development this offseason. Obviously, we're still just at the very front end of the offseason, and there's a long way to go as far as filling out the empty spots on this roster. So this isn't necessarily a sound the alarms, things are going to go poorly. But I do think it's fair to recognize that there's going to be a major shift on this roster from the third most experienced team in the country to what it's going to be next year. And if you want to do some paralleling, which is a word that I just made up right now, mm-hmm. because I trapped myself by my sentence structure, mm-hmm. draw some parallel lines between 2022 TCU football and mm-hmm. 2024 TCU men's basketball, where football had a brand new coaching staff, but also the, by definition, most experienced team in the country. And what did they do? They won a ton of close games. They executed down the stretch in clutch moments. They made the Big 12 championship, and they made the college football playoff, and they won a game, and they made the national championship. What did we see from this men's basketball team this year as the third most experienced team in the country? A lot of second half blown leads, a lot of bad execution in key moments, a quarterfinal loss in the Big 12 tournament, and a one and done in the NCAA tournament. And so it almost feels like this was the year where really the deep run was supposed to happen, and it didn't. And we can sit here all night and assign blame wherever we think it should be assigned. I don't think that's productive, really. But realistically, like, this was supposed to be the year you made the run, and you didn't make the run. So how do you rebound in a year that's supposed to be a rebuilding year? And what does 2024 and 25 look like? You know, Dixon just signed his 2-year contract extension. He's here through 29-30. You know, there's a long runway here for him, and I think that's great and appropriate. But how do we handle this transition in a season of college basketball? Season not just being one season, but just kind of overarching this now time and place of college basketball, where rebuilding should not take you very long because you have access to the portal.
Well, that's the difference between 2022 TCU football and 2023-24 TCU basketball. 2022 TCU football had guys that took their lumps as freshmen and sophomores in that program.
That's true.
And TCU basketball had to recruit a lot of guys that had played a lot of basketball but had not played a lot of basketball at TCU. You had that core group. You had Emmanuel Miller, Micah Peavy, Jacoby Coles, Xavier Cork. You had those guys, just like you had your Max Duggins and your Kendre Millers and your Quentin Johnstons and, your Bud Clarks and guys that
Avila,
had been. Avila. And then you brought in some key pieces. Alana Lee, you know, is the first one that comes to mind. Johnny Hodges, like some guys that were going to be really critical role players, but had great understanding of the role and were willing to fit in. Basketball is a little bit different because most guys that are transferring because they want more minutes. They want more opportunity. And in this case, particularly, you had a couple guys like a Jameer Nelson and a Trey Tennyson who were looking potentially to get on the radar of professional scouts at some level, right? And so that's kind of I need to get mine. It's harder to get guys that haven't been around to buy into a system. And I'm not saying those guys didn't try. I mean, we saw a lot of growth in Nelson, especially of trying to play a role and play a role he was not comfortable playing or was not his natural position. But that's the thing, right? So if you can keep your Jace Posey, your Isaiah Manning, your David Punch, these guys coming in, and you can say, buy in, take your lumps this year, maybe take a couple next year too. You're looking at a year three of being, you know, I mean, why do we see Oakland and St. Peter and all of these schools make runs? Because guys stay together. That's really, really hard to do in today's world of college basketball, though. That'll be the test for Jamie Dixon. Can you get these, he got these guys to buy in redshirt. Getting Jace Posey to redshirt that's a huge, huge step. That's a huge feather in his cap. Because Jace Posey's not going to go a lot of places in redshirt. That highly touted. But you get that guy to redshirt. You get Manning to redshirt. You get some of these freshmen to buy into small roles next year. And you say, please just trust me and make this a 3-year commitment or 2-year commitment. And then you probably see some big dividends. But there's no guarantee of that happening. And then how do you find the right pieces to complement them? Like that really becomes the question. And oh, by the way, next year you're adding Arizona.
Yep.
Next year you're adding a Colorado team that does lose their best player, but was pretty dang good this year.
Pretty much their entire roster.
Yeah, I guess Eddie Lampkin did leave as well. But now you've seen some proof of concept there. And maybe we know if you Colorado as a school can recruit the portal. So so it'll be interesting to see. But it's not like this league gets worse because Texas and Oklahoma leave. It's only going to get tougher. It's only going to get deeper. Oklahoma State, I think, made an absolute home run hire. I mean, there's just – it's not going to get any easier to be successful. And so it's going to have to be – what is a fan base do we need to see? And what does TCU Athletics leadership need to see? What is the expectation for this team in 2024, 2025? And what do we have to be willing to accept but still be able to see the forest for the trees, so to speak?
For sure. Yeah, and perspective is critically important when you're in a transition period with a program as well. And I think you did a great job of providing it there. On the women's side, you see Sydney Harris hit the portal, Vic Flores hit the portal, Jade Clack hit the portal, which was probably, I think, expected with Clack. Yeah. And so now, I mean, you've got Jaden Owens gone. You bring in Haley Cavender. So there's your kind of point guard swap. You bring back Madison Connor. You bring back Aaliyah Robertson. But really kind of it's a similar situation for Campbell in year two, which is, hey, how are we going to hit the portal in a way that brings us the veteran leadership we need, the skills that we've kind of are missing right now? How are we going to put a roster together that's competitive and take us a step further than we went this year? Because I think in spite of all of the injuries, I would qualify year one under Mark Campbell as a wild success.
Because of the injuries, we get to qualify it as a wild success.
I mean, yeah, if you don't have the injuries, this is a tournament team. This is a team that probably pushes for the top quarter of the Big 12, not the bottom third. What needs to happen now, I guess, to take that step forward beyond just, hey, let's try and stay healthy. You got it. I mean, they got a lot of people to replace as well.
Well, it's so interesting too, because, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking about it. It's like, oh man, this team would have been so, but also this TCU basketball, men's and women's both kind of ran parallel lines through the first 2 months of the season. TCU women's basketball, I don't want to say got a pass, but obviously their expectations changed dramatically because of the injuries. You know, who knows what that would have looked like, but I think based on the concept, proof of concept that we were allowed to see, where Mark Campbell succeeded and, you know, Jamie Dixon did not, is the women he brought in from the portal seemed to buy in and understand their roles and be willing to play those roles much earlier and more effectively, but they didn't have to go through the grind of a Big 12 season together to have to prove that, right? So so we don't know. But by everything that we saw, it sure did look like he understood how to recruit the portal, that he brought in great players. There's not a lot of freshmen, and I don't think there's I think there's only like one or two incoming freshmen in this signing class who, like, it's a very small group. And so, you know, that's going to be, does he consistently try to build with the portal, or what's ultimately his grand plan? And I know you've got to sit down.
You're talking about the high school class?
Yes.
They don't have any high school side.
There's
high school
players signed. Okay.
No.
Okay.
And I asked him about this around signing day in the fall as well, because, I said, hey, I know that you got here in like February, and that's not a lot of time. And so what he said was, you know, we understand that as a new staff, it's almost impossible to get into high schools right now and convince a senior on a new relationship to come through the front door of our building and be a part of this program. So what he did, and we'll see if this works out or not, it makes sense in my brain when he explained it to me. He said his staff, it's portal and it's juniors in high school. And we're just going to start cultivating those relationships with juniors. And we're going to start to establish ourselves with the class of 2025. And we're going to try and hit the ground running with the transfer portal and then bring in a class in 2025 out of high school. I'm like, okay, I mean, I understand the relationship aspect of recruiting and the shortened timeline and all of that makes sense in my head. We'll see how it works out in practice. It's that theory versus practice bit again,
I would love to see
we'll
one
see.
Or two, coming in this year, something to build on. But I also understand why there's not. You know, I think it does make sense, in theory. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. He's got a lot of holes to fill. Sydney Harris was the one that really, I think, surprised me. And I don't know if that should have been a surprise to me. But that was one where I was like, man, like when we saw her healthy, like you saw something there. Like there was a lot of potential. But I also imagine that there have been a lot of conversations and there's a master plan there. And, I think, and I hate to say this, I'm loath to say this because the death of the Pac-12 makes me sad. But you look at how good Oregon State was. You know, you look at some of the players in that conference, there's going to be a lot of movement coming out of that. And they'll, Mark Campbell knows that conference well. So I don't worry about them being able to kind of rebound next year, especially with what he does bring back. But I think it'll be the same thing. You're going to have to lower your expectations a little bit because, you know, having Jaden Owens and Sedona Prince alongside Madison Connor, I mean, that was your... This team could have made a run for sure, undoubtedly, and they just never got that opportunity. So it'll be interesting to see. There's a bigger spotlight on women's basketball than we've seen in any time in recent history, and I want that spotlight to shine on Fort Worth. But they're going to have to win, and they're going to have some personalities. And oh, by the way, pretty big personality coming in, as you already mentioned. Haley Cavender will have people paying attention to TCU women's basketball. The question will be, can Mark Campbell and his staff make that attention mean something more than just the celebrity of their point guard?
I mean, the reality is that Haley Cavender is a point guard. She's a hooper. I mean, I think I wrote about this in the fall in my first kind of sit down with Campbell was you got a lot of folks on the roster or incoming on the roster. Now my dogs are barking.
Your turn.
There's a storm rolling in. We had the eclipse today. We had full coverage today of the eclipse, and now we've got like thunderstorms and hail for the next 3 days. So
Texas,
thank you for Texas weather. Appreciate it. God, thank you. But you have not only Haley Cavender, who's got this massive social following, and you've got Sedona Prince, who's got a massive following. She had a massive following this year. You had Jaden Owens, who had a huge following this year. You had Aaliyah Robertson, who is a local product who everybody paid a lot of attention to. But the reality is that I think a lot of folks stop at that kind of front door, front window of social media. And they think, oh, this is who this person is. When in reality, like nobody saw how hard Sedona Prince worked to get back from that finger injury this year. Every time we had a media availability with Jamie Dixon, she was in there shooting free throws or getting drill work done or one-on-one work with a coach to work her way back. She didn't post any of that on socials.
Yeah.
Right. We've seen a little bit of Haley Cavender on socials posting about like shooting hoops with her sister and doing some other stuff, but she does most of her work in the background behind the scenes. And I think that it's going to be a really cool opportunity for her and for the rest of TCU women's basketball next year to provide a deeper look into kind of the full personhood of some of these young women is to say, oh yeah, we know her as like the social media star and the girl who she and her twin did some stuff with WWE and with Jake Paul and whoever else, but she's a basketball player. I mean, she was the leading scorer and leading assists person on a Miami team that made an Elite Eight run.
Yeah.
Like she's a hooper. Right. And so I think TCU fans are going to be really excited to see a hooper get in the building and win some basketball games with this team. And then also just kind of welcome all of Haley Cavender into the mix as well. I think it's going to be super cool.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. You know what else is super cool?
What's super cool?
Back when when TCU baseball was winning series, our friends at Hell's Half Acre were very, very busy producing sweet merch. I happen to be wearing one of them tonight. We are so thankful to our sponsors. We're thankful to Dave Campbell's Texas Football, of course. And we're very, very thankful to the good folks at Hell's Half Acre Stadium Goods. You've got the hat. I'm rocking the shirt. They also, like, I think in light of the struggles, there have been some great sales going on with House Hatmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really,
so,
truly.
Yeah, if you keep your eyes peeled to their website, there's lots of great opportunity. But t-shirts, like you said, the rope hat, which is great. Sweatshirts, quarter zips. I mean, they have the whole thing. Game day gear, koozies, everything. They do an awesome job. And so much of what they do is about giving back to TCU student athletes. So whether it's using NIL deals, giving a portion of the proceeds, that our friends at Hell's Half Acre are doing really incredible things. Super creative, awesome, awesome looking merch, and then doing really great things with the success that they're having with their business. And kind enough to help sponsor us here on the Frogs Insider podcast. As Jamie always says, if you do make a purchase because you heard about them from us, and you go check out their website in that little comment box, let them know that you heard about it on the Frogs Insider podcast. But we love supporting people that support TCU. We love supporting local businesses, and Hell's Half Acre is both of those things and more. So check them out. Hell'sHalfAcreSG.com is the website. Great social media presence as well. And like you can always see them hanging around TCU sporting events, supporting the Frogs. So please go support people that help support us.
Preach. You know who else I love following on social media, Melissa? That's the TCU football account this time of year. Because you know what they're posting?
Spring football content, baby.
All the spring football content. And it's so much fun. They just had an open practice on Friday night. I know that a lot of folks were out there watching that thing live. I was not, because I was watching TCU baseball happen in Cincinnati. I was keeping up with all of Jeremy Clark's updates on Horned Frog Blitz, though. I will say that. No one covers football quite like JC. Shameless plug. But look, spring football is back, and I think it's important to A, allow people to get excited, because there's so much that goes into dissecting a season, dissecting a position group, or talking about how teams are going to improve, or which coach is on the hot seat, or, you know, all of the extracurricular stuff that comes with just following along with college football. I like the spring because in reality, just every fan base is excited. Every fan base has a reason to be hopeful. Every fan base has a reason to look forward to the fall in some capacity. And with TCU fans, that is exactly how it is right now and exactly how it should operate. That's part A. Part B is it's 14 practices in a spring game.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to learn everything we want to learn about this team right now, especially when you consider the fact that Josh Hoover is not practicing at all, and that the football, one half of the football on the defensive side, is still doing install. Right. And so everything that we can try and glean or try to dissect about the spring football season, my take on it, even though I do create content around it a little bit, is let's just enjoy it. Yeah. Let's just, you know, Ken Seals was out there on Friday night slinging it. That's dope. That's great. Awesome. Drake Dabney looked great. There was some Clark on Clark crime
can
out
really
there.
Book.
Oh my gosh, Haas was zooming. He's been zooming all spring, right? Guy should be going and getting fitted for a tuxedo for the prom, and he's out there zipping around, dusting people, really, truly, with his legs. Like, he is so fast. But that's the level of conversation I think we should be having. Oh my gosh, it's pretty cool. Andy Avalos rolled out a dime, a 416 dime the other day. Like, that's pretty dope. I'd love to see that in a real game in the fall. Wonder how that will work out. That, like, we don't need to get into, oh my gosh, Cam Smith, the Memphis transfer, like, he looks great. They're really, really high on him. Man, he's got to get like 100 tackles and 5 picks next year. That's
no,
that,
we have no idea.
Come on, let's get it. You know, oh my gosh, these two guys they ran with the ones at cornerback today. Oh, what does that mean? What about this other guy that was supposed to run with the ones? Well, he probably will tomorrow. You know?
Yeah,
Imani Bailey, right? In the spring 2 years ago, everyone was like, why is Imani Bailey getting snaps? Kendra Miller should be getting those snaps. What's going on? Amari DiMercato, why is he in on third downs? What are we doing?
It's the only time of year that
enjoy
you get to
it
watch.
And just let him work.
Yeah. It's the only time you get to watch your guys play and not have to think about the fact that you're anything but undefeated, right? Like, even in the fall, it's too close to real. But yeah, you're just, I think it's fine to enjoy. Now, again, I've been burned too many times. I'm not going to watch a spring football and be like, I think we're going to be 12-0 this year. No, we've learned, we both learned that lesson last year,
big
right?
Big time last year.
But you just say, hey, there's some cool stuff happening on the defensive side of the ball. We've heard the word pressure more in the last couple mm-hmm. weeks than we heard in the last 2 years. Yes. You know, I think that if nothing else, you feel like, hey, there's a couple guys in the quarterback room that, you know, we don't know Josh Hoover's injury situation, his health situation yet. They've been pretty hush-hush on that. Mm-hmm. But we got guys that look at least competent, right? Yes. It's fun to get excited about Haas, and I still hope that I do not see him in a meaningful situation for more than a package or two a game this whole year. Like, I hope mm-hmm. we don't get to that point, but I'm still excited to be there. Like, ooh, there could be some fun packages for this kid. Kendall Bras could have some fun with him. But other than that, yeah, like just watch and enjoy and be excited that football is happening at TCU and that everybody's a winner right now. And mm-hmm. I think other than, like you said, paying attention to some of the stuff that Avalos is doing and some of the things that are going to look a lot different, that I think where you can actually start to glean a little bit of knowledge and information going forward.
Yeah.
For the most part, just enjoy. Just be football. Happy, be
it's
excited.
Football in
it's
March
football.
And April. It's like, football. And that's pretty great.
Yeah.
It is football.
And those
they
were
put pads on.
Quotes.
They hit each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now you're right. Fall camp, too, is a totally different beast. That's when you mm-hmm. should say, it's interesting that this guy's getting most of the first team snaps. And I think we said that at times about some of the things that we saw along the offensive and defensive lines last fall.
Yeah.
Fall
yeah,
camp as well.
Sure.
It's like, it's interesting that this is the order of events that's happening right now. And then they rolled out there and, you know, for the first four games, Brandon Coleman was a guard, not a tackle. And, you know, so there are some things that you can glean from fall camp that I think will translate into the season and that should be paid attention to. But yeah, in spring ball, I'm just happy that I get to season football and have a lighthearted conversation about it.
It's delightful.
It is delightful, just like our friends over at Homefield Apparel,
well
Melissa.
Done.
Homefield Apparel, gosh, it's like 80s right now in Texas. It dropped down into the 70s for the brief minute and a half that we had our solar eclipse today. So it's not quite hoodie weather anymore, but I still occasionally do rock the Homefield Apparel hoodie around my house. I'm rocking the Homefield Apparel shirt right now because it is comfortable and a little bit warmer than normal. Homefieldapparel.com, frogsin15 is the code for 15% off of your first purchase and 10% off of all subsequent purchases. That's frogsin15. Get over there, Homefield Apparel, use the code, and get yourself some excellent TCU swag because it's incredibly comfortable and it looks great. The
Agreed.
End. That is my pitch.
And seeing a couple of Big Ten teams playing the national championship game, man, the amount of bomber jackets and home field shirts and sweatshirts I saw in the crowds, very, very high. So mm-hmm. be a lemming, wear home field, the end.
I had to process for a second that, like, make the connection there and understand that, yes, Washington is, in fact, going to be in the Big Ten. So,
no, I was talking about basketball and talking about Iowa and Purdue, but that's also, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Yes. Yeah, so really in all sports, and I just, 10. You know, the home field has schools spanning the United States. I still think of them as a little Midwestern Indiana brand. So
they are a little Midwestern Indiana brand. They're just primed for a global takeover.
They are. You know who's not primed for a global takeover?
Oh, okay.
And listen, we saved this. Like, look, Jamie and I's conversation yesterday about what we were going to talk about on the podcast, when we were going to record. Guys, I just, like, if you are not following Jamie for baseball, if you're not reading his articles on 247, if you are not interacting with him in the game thread, for this man's sanity, please go do so. if you don't want to make the financial commitment to Horned Frog Blitz, like, that's fine, but please subscribe for maybe like the next 2 months just so that he isn't screaming into the void. And maybe even go say some nice things. Not because no one's being mean to Jamie, but the negativity, like, it's rough, guys. It is. And I will say that, like, I hate read a lot of it because I feel so badly about the way things are going on the baseball diamond that I just got to kind of commiserate with people. Yeah. Jamie, I think I texted in the group Saturday or Sunday and was just kind of like, is this the point where we just kind of throw in the towel? Because we know we keep saying, remember last year, this is worse. The record is worse. Mm-hmm. The way they're losing is worse. There has not been a lot of bright spots. You talked about rock bottom in your Monday morning manager. I read it this morning. It was great. I don't want to say this team can't pull it together. You've said a million times this team is too talented to be playing this badly. But also, like, I don't know what can turn things around at this point in the season with their remaining schedule.
So it's April. What is it? What is today? April 8th at the time of recording this. Do you remember? And I drew some parallels between this this weekend at Cincinnati, where the Frogs got swept, run ruled on Sunday, to last year's weekend at West Virginia, where they lost the first two games and then got run ruled on Sunday. It's April 8th. That was the 5th, 6th, and 7th was that Cincinnati series that we just experienced. Do you remember the weekend that West Virginia happened last year?
Yes. Yeah, it was terrible. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, but the dates. Do you remember the dates?
Was it this weekend?
It was the last weekend in April.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. It was 3 weeks ahead of where we are currently in this baseball season.
Okay.
It was the 23rd, 24th, and 25th, I believe. Now, you're right. The record is worse than it was last year. This is a bigger hole to climb out of. They don't have a Braden Taylor or an Eli Nunez or a Trey Richardson or an Austin Davis to save them. They don't even maybe have a Sam Stoutenborough to step up in the back half of the season like they did last year. And they are also very much staring down the barrel of the next two weekends that could fully bury them, with Texas Tech coming to town and then a road weekend at Texas. Mm-hmm. Like there is no way to polish what we have seen from TCU baseball over the last really 6 weeks of the season to make it sound like, oh, hey, I know for sure that everything's going to be okay, because I don't. This team is not played up to its ability. They aren't hitting right now at all. Not consistently. They had two really good games against Houston, but they scored two runs each in these three losses against Cincinnati. There's some starting pitching issues that are still very apparent. I don't even include Peyton Tolley's Friday night start in that, because he gave you 5 2/3. He only allowed 4 runs. He struck out 6. The command wasn't quite where it was the last 2 weeks. But in my opinion, if a starter in college baseball gives you 5 2/3 against a team that's got a sub 500 record in your conference and a team that's got an ERA as a pitching staff of almost 6.5, going 5 2/3 and 4 runs should have been plenty for TCU to take a hold of that baseball game and come away with at least one win. Luis Rodriguez had a bad start on Saturday, gave up 6 runs in 2 innings. That was tough, coming off of a great performance the week before. The reality is that Cincinnati did all of their damage in the early innings. They scored 14 runs between the first and second innings on Saturday and Sunday, and then just held the lead after that. They just kind of held on, and TCU couldn't climb out of the hole, even though the bullpen looked pretty good. On Friday and Saturday, the bullpen gave you 7 1/3 scoreless innings combined. Cademan Parker looked really good. Mason Bixby looked awesome. And yet, they got behind 3-1 on Sunday, and I think general feeling was, I don't know if they can climb out of this hole.
Yeah.
It was a 2-run hole.
And then it became
a 7-run hole, and then it became an 8-run hole, and then it became a run rule. And so, you know, things kind of just spiraled out of control after that. But the reality is that it was 4-2 on Friday, and you weren't sure if they were going to be able to come back. It was 6-2 on Saturday, and you didn't feel great about it at all. And then all of a sudden things got out of hand on Sunday. I think that there are still signs of this being a ball club that could break out of it, that could snap out of it. Peyton Tolley hitting a double the other day. You have Sam Myers, who went 6-11 on the weekend, swung the bat really well after not getting consistent playing time over the last 10 days. 12 days or so. He went 6-11 and didn't score a run, by the way, right? Like, they're not stringing together hits like they should. They're not getting on base by hitting the baseball like they should. The pitching has been too inconsistent. And if they don't figure out a way to fix that, like I wrote today, if the Big 12 tournament started tomorrow, they would not have gotten an invite to Arlington, because only the top 10 teams in the conference go. They're sitting 12th in the conference. This team is too talented to be playing baseball at this level. And yet they've done it for the last 5 weeks outside of the Houston series, which they swept. Somewhere between what we saw that weekend against Houston and what we saw this past weekend against Cincinnati, that somewhere between those two instances is where real TCU baseball is. And I'm just, while the road is, as Kirk Sarlos likes to say, everything we want to achieve is still out ahead of us. And that is true at this point in the year. There's got to be a growing sense of urgency that, hey, everything's out in front of us. There's still road left, but we're running out of road. And the road doesn't get easier from here because you've got Texas Tech, you've got Texas, you've got a Kansas State team that's hitting its stride. You've got a Baylor team that looks better than everybody thought it would be and is currently ahead of you in this conference standings. Yeah. A Baylor team that took 2 of 3 from that Cincinnati team that just swept you, right? Like, they're, the potential is still there, but there needs to be a different sense of urgency moving forward. And I think there will be, right? I mean, we're not going to see them play on Tuesday or Wednesday this week because of the weather forecast in Fort Worth. They basically called UT Rio Grande and said, do you want to come up here and risk the rain delays, and had a conversation and kind of mutually decided to cancel those two games. So you've got a week to sort it out and put a better product on the field. I don't know that there's a singular solution to it at this point. I know that the talent is there. I know that the coaches are capable. Those are the two facts that I'm standing firm on. What the end product ends up looking like from here on out, though, I truly have no idea.
Well, and I think that will be the question, because something that's different this year than a year ago is this conference is not nearly as strong.
True.
And you're losing to teams that are not, you're losing series to teams that are not postseason teams pretty consistently. You know, I think the talent is there, but also what is talent without production? Mm-hmm. And, you know, like you said, the road is getting short. And at some point this talent has to produce. And I think we've seen a lot of questions rise up among the fan base of, if the talent isn't producing, but we've seen the talent produce before, what's the disconnect there? What's different? What's happening? And that we don't know the answer to, because we're not in the locker rooms and we're not in the dugout. We're not in all of those places. I mean, like, it's not too late. Kirk Sarlos is right. Everything that they want is still ahead of them, but it's getting real late, real early.
Sun's getting real low, big guy.
Yeah. That moon is quote, passing through.
Look, and I will say this too, because I think I tried to take the approach on the podcast during the fall when we talked about baseball and in the preseason leading up to baseball, of not doing what we both did for the football team last year, of saying,
listen, oh my God, I said 7-5, 8-4 initially. You talked me into excitement.
Yeah, that's fine. It's my fault.
Because you were out there. Yeah, I'm a blame
Hashtag
Jamie.
Blame Jamie. But look, I sat there all fall and watched this team. And similar to what I just said about spring football, there's only so much you can glean from inner squad. But this team is a better hitting team than what we've seen on the field the last month. I stake my credibility on that. They are a better hitting team. They are a better pitching team than we've seen them be consistently this year. And at some point, you either figure it out or you don't.
Yeah.
And we're gonna see which way this team goes over the next 3-4 weeks, and that'll be what it is. You know, I posted it in the thread on Sunday. I said, y'all go enjoy your Sunday. you can read the recap after. I'm here, and I know that there are a lot of TCU fans that are sticking it out with this team.
Yeah, I'm still watching,
and I think you should stick it out with this team. But look, sometimes teams don't reach the expectations that the fan base has for them. But whenever that happens, I think it's important for people to realize too, if they're missing your expectations, then they've missed theirs by even more.
Sure.
And I know the expectations that this team had for itself. I know that the expectations some of these players had for themselves and these coaches had for themselves. And nobody's happy about where they are at 20-11 and 5-10 in the Big 12. Nobody's happy about that. And I mean, there's some pretty damn smart people in that room who are trying to figure it out. So we'll see, right? Like, that's all we can do at this point is just say, we'll see. If they figure it out. And it'll be pretty cool if they do.
The thing that sucks is, I think for so many years, when we've had a gut punch of a football season and then a gut punch of a basketball season, almost every time TCU baseball pulled us out of the mire, They have not pulled us out of the mire as a fan base yet this year, and that is rough. We need to be paying. And then even tennis is dealing with injury issues. So like, tennis is struggled a little bit because they've been missing some guys. So it has been a rough athletics year for the TCU fan base. Baseball could still turn that around on a dime. I mean, we've seen this. This team can get hot for 6 weeks for sure. That's not out of the question whatsoever. But it also, this might just be one of those years. And I think that we've got to put all of our good karma in the bank for the future and hope that 2024, 2025 brings us something different if we don't get a quick turnaround here in 2024 and hope that something good happens. But I will say, as easy as it is to get frustrated with Sonny Dykes after that football season and Jamie Dixon after that basketball season and now Kirk Charlos in the middle of this baseball season, every single one of those coaches has proven that they can do great things on their respective fields. And one bad season doesn't have to define. You also don't want to have to count on a team getting hot and making a run, which I think all three of those coaches have benefited from. In recent years, you'd like to see some consistency. And I think that was kind of our struggle at the end of Gary Patterson's time in football, especially is where's the consistency. But then Jamie Dixon's been pretty damn consistent. And we're like, this is not good enough. So basically what we're saying is we are acting like a big time athletic school. And ultimately, that's where we all wanted to be. So congratulations to us. Welcome to being unhappy all of the time with your sports.
Look, I don't know. I like it. I like the conversation. I like the discussion. Sure. And yeah, it'd be great to have every team win every game, but that's not real life because other teams are trying just as hard as you are. There was something. Oh, you mentioned injuries with tennis, and I did want to do just like a quick injury bug update because the TCU baseball is dealing with a mounting number of injuries. Kyle Ayers out for the year.
Such
with the elbow injury. We still don't have a timeline for Brody Green's return from his hip and groin stuff. I don't know if he's going to be back. I just don't at this point. Hunter Hodges dealing with an oblique. If you've ever tried to lift your arm above your head with the strained oblique, sucks.
It's tough.
Now imagine trying to throw a baseball. Probably not great. Doesn't feel good. You've got Peyton Chatagnier, hammy, timeline TBD.
Logan Maxwell
pulled up lame on Tuesday, was replaced, played Friday, gutted it out, was not running at 100% in the ninth inning. Yeah. That much was very clear.
Yeah.
And then missed Saturday and Sunday. Curtis Byrne also missed Saturday and Sunday. We didn't see Micah Kendrick at all this weekend. You know, there are mounting injuries on this team that I think are part of the inconsistency we're seeing simply because baseball players are creatures of habit. I think more so than almost any other athlete.
For sure.
And TCU has had over 25 different lineups in the first 31 games of the season. Some of that is tinkering, trying to find the right match, the right combination of guys at the right spots in the order. Some of that is also, we don't know how long this guy's going to be out. Yeah. Now we've got to find a body. Hey, this guy just got hurt. Now we've got to switch this up. The DH spot hasn't been hitting like we need. Let's see if this guy can do it, right? There's a lot of different things kind of that go in to a situation like that. But when there's that much inconsistency, whether it's because of injury or production or something else, that's going to make life a little bit more challenging for everybody involved as well. And so not only do I hope that they find a little bit more consistency just in their gameplay, I think if they find a little bit more consistency just in the lineup, because either guys are staying healthy or coming back or whatever it might be, starting to produce, I think that could go a long way to saving the season as well. It's just finding a little bit more lineup consistency. Way easier to say than to do.
Yeah. All this to say is that Performance Center needs to get open because
thank God that's fully funded. Holy cow.
All of these problems.
Put everybody in the Purple Snow Room immediately. Yep. Immediately. Just build that first. Get everybody in there. Oh, Melissa.
Jamie, I think this is all. I think we got to get off of this podcast so that we can go watch the second half of this outstanding game and these two giant human beings battle in the paint for 20 more minutes.
14 plus feet of human. Just duking it out in the paint. Pretty dope.
Crazy.
This has been the Frogs Insider Podcast. She is Melissa Treebosser. I am Jamie Plunkett. We will be back next week talking about TCU versus Texas Tech Maybe there will have been some more basketball news by then as well. And there's going to be another week of spring football to talk about and not overanalyze, but talk about just a little bit. So we will get to all of that. A big thanks to Dave Campbell's Texas Football, to Homefield Apparel, and Hell's Half Acre Stadium Goods for working with us. And we will talk to you next time. Go Frogs.
Go Frogs.